Hey there, my name's Yvonne Fletcher from NY Events and you're listening to DRN1 and this is Bounce Back, a fun talkback show of Perth-based artists and comedians. Today we have two fabulous artists in the Perth scene. One is an amazing comedian, Umar Azid. Thank you, Umar, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Desiree Crossing, who is a visual artist. Thanks, Desiree.
Hi, how you doing?
Hello. Okay, I've got a series of questions that I go through and ask you guys. It's a bit of fun. So the first question I've got to you for you today is, what is your background? So Desiree, do you want to start with that one?
That's a really broad question.
I know.
Yeah, it is.
What is my background?
Focus on your art. That's all right.
Okay. I come from a family of pretty creative people. My grandmother was a painter and her father was a cartoonist for the West Australian.
Oh, wow.
And my mother was a great artist as well, and my dad was a good drawer too. My mum went blind, unfortunately, so she could never, you know, take it anywhere. And I mean, she chose not to. And all my cousins are pretty creative as well.
Yeah.
So I grew up in a good environment like that. Went to uni, studied visual arts there. It was fantastic. And then I ditched art and played in bands for my 20s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then I had a bit of a thing in my mid-30s, and I decided, what am I doing with my life? I didn't decide, I questioned. And I thought, like, I don't want to be doing what I'm doing right now when I'm like 50 or 60. If I'm an artist, I can do that until I die.
Yeah.
So I decided to take my art seriously again. It was the only thing that made sense to me. And here I am.
That's actually really beautiful. Yeah. I think you've got to live by what your purpose is.
Oh,
yeah.
And I'm so much happier.
Yeah. Brings happiness.
Desiree painted my mum and dad. It was, she took a photo and she painted my mum and dad, and it was stunning.
Yeah, I've seen that.
It's amazing. I reckon my dad's probably cried about 3 times in his entire life. He didn't cry when he saw it, but he was close. He was like, and he never gives anything away. He's a hardened man, and I'm like, and he was like, oh, that's I like how they've done the shading in my face. And I'm like, well, Desiree did a good job there. Like, yeah, it's really cool. Gonna go in the other room for a second. And then mum was over the moon, and then like even the next day dad's like, oh, I really like it there. No, I put it over there. He's never he just loves it now. So he's always, I don't know. So Des is amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks, Uma. I really enjoyed painting that one.
Yeah.
And then you can have it, and then you can pass it down to your kids.
Yeah, well,
it's a nice thing about paintings.
It is a
nice thing about paintings, yeah. I think it's just, I don't know, it's just cool, like when you see like if like someone you know on a painting and you just go and you just look at it for a while, you go, that is actually really cool. Like the way that everything's been done, and you're like, that's really good. I like it. You know, and you know, I could look at it for hours.
Yeah, I've got an absolute love for art. I've got some beautiful pieces at home. So yeah, just seeing your work it's very impressive.
Thank you.
And Uma, what is your background then?
So there are no comedians in my family. I think there's just a lot of funny, like, characters, like especially my uncles and stuff, especially back in – so mum and my parents are from Pakistan. So there's a lot of – like, we got, like, just a lot, you know, funny people in our family and, like, you know, and I was born in London and moved out here when I was about 10 years old with my family. And, yeah, so as far as comedy goes, I've always been, you know, when you like you're a funny person, but you never like, could I be a professional funny person? It's like, well, you know, when you go, oh, you've done a great, you can cook a good barbecue, and you go to someone's house and you go, you know what, Desiree just cooks snags like you wouldn't believe. She's amazing. And you know what you should do, Desiree? You should go work for Nobu. You know, and that's how I feel, like, you know, when someone goes, oh, that guy, girl is really funny. They should do stand up. Like, no, they shouldn't. Like, you gotta be really careful, man. Like, you gotta really wanna do it.
Yeah.
And I think I had that, like, oh, Umar's really funny. Like, even at school, like, Umar's really funny. And then you go through, you know, you go through jobs. You should do stand up. I'm like, nah, I don't want to. And then finally one day I decided to do it. And, the Raw Comedy, it's Melbourne Comedy Festival. A competition, so it's brand new comedians get up, and it's a national wide competition. And I did that. I was like, 4 years ago, and it was my first night of comedy doing that. And yeah, I got through to the grand final. Like, and that's when I was like, oh, this is actually fun. You know, it's really good. And then you spent, a year just bombing. And you find, and then you meet some awesome people, awesome comics, and then you learn. And it's just, and I've just stuck with it. And I've just done really well. And I'm so looking forward to the future as well.
You've done amazing. So even speaking of the Royal Comedy, you recently judged that as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I did actually. I judged the, one of the couple of the heats in the finals as well. So it was we got such a huge talent base in Perth. It's incredible. Like, it's just I hate watching comedy. I get really nervous. I get like, I'm like, Des has seen me, and I'm like, oh, I just start, what are they doing? That, oh no, like I start scratching, and I start like, it's like I'm a crack addict. Then I'm running out the door. I've got to be near an exit. I'm like, I've got to leave. But so it takes a lot for me. So where the Royal Comedy was, she was at Comedy Lounge in the city.
Yeah.
And I remember just like sitting there, I'm like, going, if I can see the exit, I'll just take the book with me just so I can mark it. But it was, you know, it's but I still enjoyed it. There's some really good comics coming up. Yeah.
Can I ask if it's I mean, being a funny person is one thing, but I feel like stand up is really crafted, and it takes a long time to put together a set, generally speaking, and it's a completely different sort of thing to be naturally funny. Was that a big transition for you?
I think for me, not really, because I think I was a good storyteller. Mm-hmm. I understood structure of life, and it's just beginning, middle, and end.
Yep.
You know, so I think if you understand, I think for some comics get up on stage and just go, they just tell one-liners, and that's really cool and that's really good. And that if you see by themselves, it's like, oh yeah, that joke can stand by itself. That joke can stand by itself. Whereas I tell a narrative, and that's works for me. And then you can have one-liners within that narrative, and you can weave in and out of it. So I think for me it was like, I think you just start with what you know. I think I listened to Ricky Gervais, and he was like, even with writing, you start with what you know, you start with a story that you know, and then you find the characters, and you find the situations, and you find how funny, why things are funny, and then you throw all that away and you start again. You go, right, let's retell that story. So for me it is, but I think there is a structure there. And if you don't get the structure, I think you got to find what structure works for you.
Yeah.
Because I've seen some people that do, I mean, we've both seen some people that do some like narrative comedy, and it's like, this is going nowhere.
Yeah.
But then they get up and just do one line, and you go, why don't you just keep doing this? Why don't you just do this?
It is in delivery, but isn't it?
It is,
that,
yeah.
And the way that, yeah, they're different.
The devil is in the detail though.
It
yeah.
It can be. Okay, what does your work aim to say about you?
I think as a visual artist, you are reflecting on your own experiences, really, on a subconscious level, if not conscious.
Yep.
I try not to think too much about it, you know, which is probably a mistake, I don't know. I just, you know, I get an instinct for something and I follow it through.
Yep.
Yeah.
What was the question?
What does your work aim to say about you?
Oh, I don't know. I just don't really know. I just want people to laugh. You know. No. I tell a lie. Half of me inside is like, I really want them to laugh. The other half of me is like, I don't care if they don't laugh, but I really want to just retell my story or a funny situation.
Yep.
And I hope that people walk away and they just go, because I'm from a diverse background, they just go, hey, you know what? He's just like us. He's got bills like us, and he hates his family as well. No, I don't hate my family. But I don't know what I'm saying anymore. Des is a professional.
Don't you think, though, that being in that place is extremely powerful, where you sort of don't care what people think? Because it makes the stakes, it makes you able to focus on the work.
It does.
As opposed to other people's opinions of it.
Yeah, I find like it's taken me a little bit to like go, I don't care. And I think that's when you go from a different, that's when you go like, it's like you're playing a video game.
Mm. Yeah.
You jump a level, you go, when you don't care.
Yeah.
Not the repercussions, but I go, like, what's the risk of me saying this? Ah, yes, just say it. See what happens.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, I'm not, and if people go, I don't like the way you said that, cool. And they just walk away. Like, I think it takes a while for that to play out. Like, sometimes people can be like, oh, I didn't like the way you said that. And you go, and it hangs with you for like a day or a couple of days.
Yeah.
And you just go, why don't they like me? And now I still say that, but, but I'm more just like, ah, I don't care. Move on.
I had this amazing TAFE lecturer, and she was in marketing. This is when I was doing my marketing diploma, and she, one of the things she imparted with us was, it's none of your business what anyone else thinks of you. Yeah. And that's always stuck with me. It takes a lot to, you have to learn that, I think. It is a skill, like I said. You smash it on stage. So.
Oh, thank you. Sometimes I do, and sometimes when I don't, I just don't go on stage. I'm like, nah. I feel like when you know, sometimes when you go on stage and you just go, oh, I think I'm going to bomb. I'm not going to do this. What's wrong? My mum's calling me. it's fun. Thank you.
All right. Sorry. My next question is, what is your biggest learning curve or bomb on stage for yourself, but I guess for learning curve for you, Desiree, in any realm that you want to put it into as well?
I do think that's a big one, not caring what other people think about your work so much. Takes a lot of pressure off. For me personally, finding the right medium was important, the right subject matter as well. And when I started doing portraits, that's when things really started to click for me. And then when I moved into oil painting, I went up a level and it just made me so happy, you know. But you really need to have patience. Yep. I'm talking from a visual arts point of view. I don't know about comedy.
Oh, you gotta have more than just patience.
You need to have patience and you need to work hard.
Yeah.
I work really, really hard. And
she does, people, though.
People are always like, oh, you know, you're so talented. But that's not got anything to do with anything, you know. It's about hours working at your craft, and that's what makes the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you find, like, when people look at your work and it is amazing, they just go, oh wow, that's, you know, that, you know, there's they don't see, I mean, yes, that took you, let's say, for argument's sake, 100 hours, but they actually took you a lot longer to get to those skill levels.
Of course.
They don't see those. They just go, oh, that just took you. So when someone, like, it's like, I'd imagine if someone's like, oh, can you just paint something on my wall? And it's like, oh, that's only going to take you like a couple of days, 3 or 4 days. But it's like, no, but the skills to do that at an effective level, people don't see that. And I feel that's for a lot of, do you find that? Like,
yeah, people think you're just born with the ability to do that. Do you know, I also get a lot of people saying to me, oh, I can't even draw a stick figure. I couldn't do that. And, you know, I used to have that attitude about a few things as well. And years ago, I was living in France and I think I was about 20 and I didn't have a job because I, you know, I didn't have a working visa or anything like this. And my boyfriend at the time, he had some of those poi, you know, that you spin around.
Yeah.
And,
oh, yeah.
Dance with them and stuff. And he said to me, oh, do you want to go? And I was like, I literally said, I could never do that. And then I found myself in France with no time, like nothing to do. And there were these poi sitting here. And I just thought, oh, well, I'll give it a go.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just applied myself. And, you know, you make mistakes and you have to go back and do it again. And then your body starts to learn. And I was like, oh, my goodness. Like, I actually said I could never do this. Yeah. And all I had to do was apply myself. And
it's really good advice, isn't it? Yeah.
I think I had to learn it for myself in that way, but that moment was a big change for me.
Yeah.
Because it sounds so easy, someone to be like, just keep practicing, experience, practice. It's like, yeah, it's easier to say. It's very hard to do. It's like there's only a special few people that can do something for the very first time.
True.
And do and go and be like phenomenal at it.
Yeah.
And for them in their own head, they're like the I don't need to work at this, therefore I don't want to do this. And it's like, oh, you're so talented. Why don't you want to do this for? It's like, it's taking me years to get there. It's like, I can't be stuffed, you know? Like, I think that's
one of the things I always say to my kids, actually, is that, you know, if you want to be good at anything, you've got to practice your craft.
Yeah.
And you look at any Olympic champion, they practice daily, and that's hours and hours and hours of dedication and time. And I think for any good craft, it's about 300 hours from memory. If you've applied yourself to that skill set for that amount of hours, you're going to be a master at it. So you're probably at, what, about 3,000?
I don't know. I don't know. But my, I think the biggest lesson I've learned in comedy is, and it's taken a while, I think it's a couple of things. A was like, I mean, the first, I had two. First lesson I learned was, so when I did raw comedy, so there was two heats and then the semi-final, the heat, semi-final, grand final. So after the first heat, I was on a high because I smashed it. And then I did the second one, and then, I was like, oh, my God, I'm never going to get through this. And I got through, and I was like, oh, my God, this is great. So when that happens, you feel like nothing can touch you. You just go, I'm the best. This is easy. This is great. I invited all my family and friends to, like, the final, and it was a bigger stage. It was lots more people than a pub, you know, like 100 people at a pub. It was more like, it was like, you know, almost 10 times as many people.
Yep.
And I just remember bombing so hard. And I remember being on, I think you know when you're bombing, when you're saying a joke and halfway through the joke in your head, you're like, man, you are fucking bombing. You are bombing hard. And I remember looking at some girl and she looked at me and she just went, she just shook her head and smiled like, and almost like in my head, I'm like, A, thank you. B, I might get a number later because she probably thinks I need to. And three, I was like, oh, my God, this is so bad. So I think I remember, like, it sounds bad, but you're never as good as you think you are. It's like you can always be better. There's always room for improvement, and don't rush that process. Like, always trust the process. And I think the second thing that I've learned, and it's just to be yourself.
Yeah.
Like, be yourself. As an artist, you have to be yourself. Like, and especially for myself, I found, like, if you're not, you just be who you are, but with the volume turned right up.
Yep.
If you're not an extroverted comedian, don't be an extroverted comedian. Be an introverted comedian. Some of the most famous, Robin Williams was an introverted comedian. Like, as soon as you see him on TV or whatever, he was just like the life of the party. But as soon as the lights went off, as soon as you're off stage, he's by himself, he's recharging himself, that's fine. And I find sometimes that people feel like I personally felt like I had to always be in the green room cracking jokes to everyone. And you do, but then somebody else comes in and you go, well, they're doing better jokes than I am. And then you get into your head, it's like, no, they're playing a role. They're being them, you're being you. So I feel like for me it was just, yeah, be yourself. And I guess the same thing goes in visual arts. Like
100%.
Yeah, you have to be, like, don't be someone else, be you. Yeah.
I was always, presented with that image of the artist and they're all, like, wacky and wild and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And I'm a bit of an introvert. Mm. I'm an extroverted introvert. I love being around people for short periods of time and focusing my energy on them for a short period of time.
Yep.
But then I just want to be, like, at home, like, with my plants and my dog. Like,
oh, my God, that sounds so good.
And then I realized that, you know, like, everybody is unique and you just got to be you and not worry about anything else. But the funny thing is I was a finalist in the Black Swan of 2018, and that was my first time meeting other artists that were all sort of portrait artists like myself. It was the first time I met other artists like me, you know, and we're all – sort of similar personality types, I would say.
That's great.
For the most part, not you know, across the board. But that was really good too, because I could see another sort of type of visual artist and realize that I fit in somewhere, which was nice.
Yeah.
That's what makes you unique, you know.
Exactly.
You embrace those little bits and pieces of yourself.
And if people don't like it, I don't, can you swear on this?
Yeah.
Oh, well, fuck them. You know, like, people don't like it. Like, but you get to a point, like, sometimes I think that's the journey you have, like, not just as a comedian, but as a person or as an artist, as a person. You get to a point where you just go, you don't want to change who you are, like, and then you go, oh, well, I didn't do this because they didn't like this, and I didn't do that, and I didn't do this joke because I thought they wouldn't like this. Like, dude, being be you.
Is important,
be you. Be real. Yeah. Like, I'm buying you. Like, if I wanted. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't, it's just, yeah.
I don't know. I think being authentic is so, so important.
Yeah.
All right. What is the best moment you've had as a performer or artist?
You go.
Okay. For me, it was Fringe Festival last year. I did my first time doing a solo show, and the show was called Halal, Is It Meat You're Looking For? And yeah, thank you. No, but it was great. Like I did, I was at the end of Fringe, and I remember on the Saturday. Oh, sorry, the Sunday morning. So Sunday was the last day of the show. It was the last day of Fringe. Sunday morning, I got an email from my Fringe producer saying, hey, you've been nominated for the Comedy Award. And I was like, cool. Like, doesn't everybody get nominated? She goes, kind of. You know, I'm like, oh, okay. But she goes, but we'd like to invite you to the awards night. I'm like, I can't do it. Like, I can't go to the awards night. My show is on the exact same time. She's like, oh, well, can you cancel or postpone your show? And I'm like, no. So there's 100 people coming to my show. I can't, like, I just don't, I didn't care. Like, all I cared about was getting through that show. Like, that was all that Sunday was. And then they're like, okay, well, we've asked all the finalists to write a little speech. And I was like, oh, okay. And she's like, can you write a speech? And I'm like, well, I'm dyslexic. It's going to take me like the whole day to write, you know, a 20 second, 30 second, a minute speech. She's, oh, cool. Well, you know, can you do it? And I'm like, this is just so it ruined my day. Like, it ruined my entire day. So I'm writing this thing. I just wrote a belligerent speech. And I think the opening words were, if you're reading this, I'm halfway through a jihad joke. And you pieces of crap wanted me to be here for this. I accept this award graciously, but please don't ever ask me to do this ever again. I'm dyslexic. So that's how I started off. And I got the room manager, Di Star, who's actually runs the Laugh Resort here. And I got her to go down for me and go, listen, I'm not going to win the award, but here's the speech in case I win. And I remember when I was in my show, halfway through my show, like everyone, there's always people walking into my show at the end. And you know, like when you're doing a comedy show, it's a lockout, so no one gets to come in because it's capacity and no one gets to come in. I've said I don't want any people walking in because it's going to distract me because I've got ADD as well. And there's four people walking and I'm like, oh, people, idiots. 10 more people walking. I'm like, oh, people are really idiots. Then there's like another 20 people walking in the back. And I'm doing my jokes, but in my head I'm like so angry that people are coming in. It's the end of the show and I'm like, thank you very much, you know. And this is all recorded and a voice over the announcer says, hey, Uma, before you go anywhere, just so you know, the Fringe Awards happened while you're on stage and you won the Comedy Award. And it was like the most realest moment for me. It was all, somebody recorded it. And I remember in my head just going, oh, fuck. I'm about to cry. Okay. But the last show had my friends and my girlfriend at the time was there as well. So it was really special for me. Mm. And I remember just in my head going, hold your shit together, hold your shit together, hold your shit together. And then I just remember getting like, Di came and gave me, she was bawling her eyes out, which made me bawl my eyes out. And I was like, ah, fuck. And then like, she's like, thank you. And everyone's clapping. And everyone that I loved was there. And everyone was clapping. Everyone was happy. And I was like, oh, cool, thanks. And then I'm like, in my head, I'm like, crack a joke. And being a Muslim and having a very devout Muslim mother, I looked at the award and it was sponsored by Gage Roads. And I'm like, mum's going to be upset. Sponsored by Gage Roads. Can't accept the extra carton of beer on this. And everyone laughed. I'm like, and that was my out. I'm like, thank you very much. I'm going. And I was going to the back and just bawling my eyes out. Just going, what the fuck is going on? I just wanted to go home. And now I've got to go do all this shit. So that was, yeah, it was a really special. And it was a special moment for me because I don't think I can ever recreate that moment. Mm. And it's just, that was so personal for me as well. And I do, sometimes I cry about it as well because I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, I fucking hate those people for doing that to me. But it was
so
fun.
Special.
A newbie comedian as well.
Exactly. And it just felt so lovely and so nice, but also like so embarrassed as well. Like I was like, oh, now I have to do things.
You feel a lot of pressure after that?
Yeah, a little bit, but also like I just took it in my stride, and I just tried to joke with it. Like there's a running joke now that I just every time I do something, I'm like, oh yeah, I can do this because I've won awards. and I'd say often, and I say it now as a piss take because I'm like, I just find it funny just to say because I just like, I can say it because I'm stupid. And that's just my shtick. My shtick is being stupid and like, yeah, well, I've won awards. So you may remember me from such things as a Fringe Award. And it's just funny and I just love it and it's just dumb.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. I started, me and Des are good friends. So I just went walking around and be like, hey, do you want to get a burger? Of course I do. I've won awards. Do they know who I am? Does the best burger shop know who I am?
What about yourself, Desiree?
For me, I've been really lucky. I've had some great experiences because of my art. But it would have been when I became a finalist in the Black Swan Prize. That whole process was just, it happened like magic. I sort of decided what I wanted to do for my portrait. And I asked my subject, I just bumped into him one night. This was the one of John Madd, the Johnny McDonough clown.
Yeah, that's amazing, yeah.
That was really fun. Bumped into him when I was out one night and I was like, dude, like I want to paint you for the Black Swan. Are you cool with that? Like, would that be good? And he's like, oh, yeah, sure, you know, that'd be great. And, like, then just, like, kind of disappeared. Like, yeah. And I was like, oh, man. He was a little bit sort of dismissive of the thing. Like, he was like, yeah, but, like, kind of, like, whatever sort of thing. And I was like, oh, man, no, I have to do this. Mm. And I painted one of his other friends and he love heart emojied the portrait of his friend. And I said to him, does that mean you'll still be my subject for this? And he's like, oh, yeah, dude, sorry, I forgot. Yeah, cool. And he's like, but I'm going away, like, next week, so for, like, a month. And I was like, I don't care. No, we're gonna get this done. And I had, like, 2 days to, like, catch up with him, like, set it up, you know, take the photos, everything like this. And then I had, I think it was 2 weeks to paint the portrait or 10 days or something like that. And I just put my whole life on hold and painted this portrait. And the whole thing just flowed and it was beautiful and it was wonderful. It was a problem-solving exercise. And then I submitted it and I had this, like, feeling. I used to always walk my dog at the along the river, along Maylands. Mm-hmm. And I had this feeling that it was going to be at this one point in my walk where I would find out that I was a finalist. This thing, it just sort of, I just knew it. And then one day, I was walking my dog, I was at the point of my walk that I expected to be, and my phone rang. And it was, it was the prize calling me to tell me that I was a finalist. And
that's insane.
That is really cool. It was really
and
cool.
Creepy.
And creepy.
That's very the secret stuff happening there.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I don't know how to explain it, but it was fantastic. And then, you know, they're such lovely people that are involved with that prize and meeting all the other artists. And, yeah, it was really nice. I, like you, though, I was a newbie painter,
yeah,
newbie artist. And I, for one, felt a bit out of my depth with all the, I said some things on a didactic panel that I didn't know was going on the didactic panel, which is the information that goes up in the gallery.
Oh.
I thought it was just, they wanted to know some extra, like, information for something. So I wrote all this dumb stuff. And I was like, oh, I sound like such an amateur.
Did you have someone there that you look up to? Like, were there other artists that you knew there?
They're all amazing.
But you know when you see them and you think you've messed up and you're like, hey.
I feel like that the whole time.
Yeah. Hi. Yeah. Hi. Seen that one over there? That's mine. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That was me. That was me. I think as artists you do though, like sometimes you see, like you jump up a level and you go, oh, where am I? What's going on? Hi, you. It's like you don't want to fangirl over them, but you do. You're like, inside you're like, please add me on Instagram, please. And then your life is just like, why won't they add me?
I messaged one of the artists from there the other day about shipping some art because I just had to ship something for a competition in Queensland. And she responded to me, but I'm pretty sure she doesn't remember who I am. She was like, hi, yeah, thanks for getting in touch. Congratulations. but we, like, hung out and stuff.
Well, that's all, how dare you? How dare she?
She was very kind, though. Oh, she gave me all the info I needed. But
yay us.
I know. You guys have done really well. Okay, my next question is, who are your biggest influencers? Do you want to start, Uma?
As in comedy?
Yeah, comedy or life.
Oh, look, you, my folks are always my big influences because I just they're your parents, yeah. They're your role models and they're your heroes. But my, I think comedy influences, I have so many varying influences. So international Dave Chappelle, mm-hmm. who is just an amazing, he's like the godfather of comedy. And then you have sort of in the local sort of scene, I really, really enjoy, the national sort of scene in Australia, people like Nassim Hussain, people like, even though Jim Jefferies is international, but he is actually an Australian.
Yeah.
So I just admire them so much. And I think it's also very hard. I mean, I, for me as a comic, I don't like watching their comedy too much because then their mannerisms and certain things they say or the way they say them come into what way I say things.
Okay.
So yeah. I try to go, ha, I like that joke. And then I just go, yep, stop. I can't watch anymore. Cause then you start walking like Jim Jefferies and then you start talking like someone. And then I've caught myself before. Like I don't watch Russell Peters anymore, who is a Canadian Indian comic.
Yep.
And some say would say he's like the biggest brown comedian in the world, and I don't like what I love him. I love his comedy, but I don't like watching his stuff because then I've become a version of that person.
Yeah.
So like, oh, he's doing a Russell Peters, you know, style jokes. Like no. I want my own style, my own stuff. I appreciate people, but I don't want to. You know, get into that sort of thing. You can influence you and you can go, oh, I've seen how they've done it, but I don't ever want there. So I've got to be really careful for me personally.
Yeah.
Des?
I've done that.
I was a real nerd when I was a teenager. No, I'm still a nerd.
Still a nerd.
and I used to be obsessed with the surrealists, Max Ernst, René Magritte, Dali.
Mm.
And I think my style still echoes some of that. Thematically, it used to be a little more in that direction, but it sort of moved away. And I love a lot of really contemporary stuff with thick, loose brush strokes, you know, and like heavy, you know, textured paint. But it's just not how I paint. I've tried to paint like that. It's a disaster. I really love David LaChapelle, who's a photographer, and he sets up these beautiful photographs, and they look like tableaus, these insane tableaus from you know, like these old religious paintings or you know, what have you. The the way his visual language is just so beautiful, and it's all super contemporary, and his colors, use of colors, things like that really, really get me going. There's an Australian painter called Laurabelle Spirovsky whose work I love, and she combines a lot of very sort of classic, technically beautiful painting techniques with some really contemporary modern stuff. Lately she's been doing a lot of architectural things in there as well,
mm-hmm.
Which I like. And that sort of reminds me of sort of the Max Ernst sort of stuff too. So, yeah, there's so many exciting, like, artists out there at the moment though. There's a guy called Daniel Sprick who does these beautiful portraits and they look like, you know, like you can see that's skin, but then they just kind of fade off into this painterly stuff on the edges, and oh, really, yeah, it's beautiful.
You know,
yeah,
sounds amazing. There's like a comedian and artist, Ardendo.
Yeah.
Like Brush with Fame.
Yeah.
What is that style that he does? I don't even like. I don't know what it is, but I tell you what, every time I say, like. You know what?
He's amazing.
If you ever want to cry, watch one of his, like, watch like a really emotional one. And I was like, oh my God. And then when the painting comes around, you're like, I'm all right now. Now I can, I'm pretty good now. No, but his stuff is amazing.
It's crazy. It's amazing. I love how he has this huge, huge, like, glass table and he's just mixing up these enormous amounts of paint.
Mm. Oh, no. It's, yeah.
He's phenomenal.
He's incredible. And he uses a spatula, isn't it, that he uses generally. And yeah, yeah. it's, Yeah, I'm with you. I seen him on stage a couple of years ago and I can't wait for it to go. He was going to make a movie at that stage.
Happy Refugee.
Yeah.
His show. Oh, man, he's...
He's great. Like, the story, the book's amazing as well. So, yeah.
Oh, awesome.
I do love it. All right, what is the biggest myth about being a comedian or an artist?
I have to say that you have to be poor to be an artist, or that being an artist is going to mean that you're poor. I mean... It can be challenging, but I think that's rubbish. Also, the whole self-destructive thing as well. I don't buy into that, and I know so many wonderful artists that don't have that in them at all either. You know, to be an artist, you are a small business.
Yeah.
And if you have any sort of, you know, business knowledge or what have you, you should be fine.
Yeah, I feel like what you said about self-destruction, because I remember, I'm still very, very new to comedy, but even earlier on for me, I saw a lot of destructive behaviour and I thought, oh my God, is this what I'm walking into? Is this going to be my life in 5, 10 years, 20 years? I'm like, there's, you know, so then I met some other comedians that established and they were like, no, that's just one aspect.
Mm.
That's just one subsect of like any profession.
Yeah.
So I think I definitely agree with Desiree about that. But also I think it goes back to what we were saying before. One myth is like, you know, when you see a good artist, a visual artist, a good painter or a good comedian, you just go, oh, well, that's just getting up doing that. You know, they're always good. Where do they come from? They've got overnight success, you know. Like, it's like, yeah, it takes people like 30 years to become an overnight success. So I don't think that people understand the amount of work. It's like Jimmy Carr, great comedian, British comedian, and he's like, oh, my God, he's so witty. He can fire back so many heckles and he's such a great comedian about this. I'm like, yeah, that's because Jimmy Carr ate so much shit and pubs, and there's a lot of trauma behind that, but he used that to move himself forward. And that people don't just see the tip of the iceberg. They don't never see the other part of it. So when you see a really good comedian or a really good artist, just know there's a lot of hurt behind those jokes and those eyes and all those brush strokes. Like, there's a lot of that's why I love art so much, because it is what you interpret and the deeper meaning.
And I do think that, intentionally causing yourself pain or trauma in your life, you know, sabotaging relationships or what have you, to make your work better. It's just a terrible way to live your life. Mm. It's not sustainable on any level. But it's a job what we do.
Yeah.
And so you have to treat it like a job, and it has to be sustainable. You need to be able to generate ideas. And, you know, motivation as well. Sometimes when you don't
100%.
Feel like that that drive because you're in the middle of a, you know, traumatic experience or something like that. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a really good point. I've got some fun questions now. So, okay, so my first one for you guys is, if you were a character in any book or TV show, who would it be and why? Like, I would be Jon Snow, but...
Okay, look, I don't know why, but I'm going to say the first thing that came to my head, like, I want to be Winnie the Pooh. Like, I actually, like, I don't know why. So I know, but I actually feel like I want to be that person, because I'm like, he's everyone's mate. He wears no pants. And he's just, he just like looks at like Eeyore, who's going through, who's like got depression. He's like, it'll be all right. Just come with me. And it's like all his mission is in life is to get this honey. That's all it is. It's like, and it's like, oh, invite people over and have honey. It's like, listen, stay here. I just saw some bees. And I guarantee that would be, if I could be that person, in a cartoon, even in real life. I mean, I don't think you can walk around without pants on.
He has some good quotes. You do some good quotes.
So. Oh, yeah. Oh, look.
You're there.
Oh, I'm already there. I'm just there. Got to go into someone's honey pot. Give me a honey. That's who I would be.
I love it. That's great.
Oh, man.
Desiree, what about yourself?
I have to go with Indiana Jones because...
Oh, my God. Damn it. I didn't change mine.
Why wouldn't you want to be Indiana Jones? Oh, you know, you get to, like, uncover all these, like, mysteries and treasures. You get to, like, ride motorcycles. I love adrenaline, you know? You, like, you have a little bit of that stuff going on. You get to, like, fuck Nazis up and, you know, like... You know, you can.
I mean, who doesn't want to do that? It's exactly. Like, hey, what do you do? Oh, I'm an accountant. Oh, I work at a petrol station. Nothing wrong with that. So, what do you do? Oh, I get to blow up this. And I get to go in the Temple of Doom. And I get to find the Tuggies and stuff. That's amazing. Actually, also as a close second, I'd love to be Carmen Sandiego. Yes. Do you remember that? But I'd love to be her. Yes. You could never find her. Yeah. Like, you're never gonna find me.
A woman of mystery.
Yeah, he's a woman of mystery. That's a great drag queen name. Carmen Sandiego.
Yeah.
That would be a great drag queen game. This is breaking the fourth wall at the moment, but yeah.
And you get to wear the great hats.
The hats. But there's always people chasing you.
But that goes for Indiana Jones and Carmen Sandiego.
Hats.
Right? Hats.
That's where it's at. You've got to have a good hat. Oh, but you know what? You know what? One thing I like about Indiana Jones, he's just so, like, everything's all, he's all like, suave, and he's all cool and sexy. But as soon as they're like, he's like, oh yeah, very nonchalant. Some like hot chicks like, oh yeah, do you want to like hang out with me? He's like, no, I don't want to hang out with you. Oh, well, I found this old map. What? I found an old map. Give me that map. It's like, dude, you're the biggest nerd going. And he's like, oh my God, I found it. What is it? I found the arrow of someone. And you're like, what the fuck is going on in your head? He's the, listen. Let's stop this thing. Go find some stuff.
Yeah.
Indiana Jones.
I think, we need to feed that adventure in us, you guys. That's really cool.
I'm getting puffed out now. I think Indiana Jones.
Oh, okay. What was the dumbest way that you've been injured?
Oh, the dumbest way I've been injured.
Mm.
Oh God, I don't.
Okay. I'm clumsy. Oh,
I do. Des, have you got one?
I've got one. Yeah.
You go.
So I used to make money as a face painter, and sometimes I would get dressed up as an elf around Christmas time for face painting gigs. You know, and something about me is I love to climb trees. I pretty much love to climb anything. So, but I love to climb trees. And one day I was at a council gig and it was at a big park and there was this fantastic tree there. And I was like, oh man, I am 100% climbing that tree before I start my job today. And I was like right up high. And then I was coming down and my foot slipped and I felt straight out of the tree on my back. Ow. And this little girl's, Mommy, that elf just fell out of the tree.
Was the elf okay?
The elf was a little stiff for a few days after that. But, had a good time.
Oh, that's so bad. That's so bad.
What about you, Ryan?
Look, I want to be honest here, okay? I don't really tell many people this, but I will, and I have told this at Barefaced Stories.
Okay, which is great. I love Barefaced.
Yeah, and I'll give you the short version.
Okay.
Okay, the short version is when I was a child in England, we had to have a bath. I was having a bath because my mum wanted, we were going to a family dinner. And mum was like, hurry up, you need to have a bath. Now, I'm not going to do my mum's accent right now because that just adds to the hilarity. So, and I didn't want to have a bath. And then she said, have a bath. And I was like, well, I want to play with my toys. I'm playing with my duck. And she's like, you're not playing with anything. You're going to be here for hours, not doing it. I said, okay. So mum left the room and she put the duck on a ledge. And I was like, okay, cool. So this is a plastic duck. And at the time, there was no Department of Commerce or Department of to check how sharp these things were or the usability, kids safe. There was no kids safe.
Yeah.
Or if there was, we got it from the dodgy Pakistani man on the corner shop. Okay. Now, anyway, so mum left the room, the phone rang. I was like, cool, here's my, I can't play with toys. Watch this. So I'm like, again, I didn't understand. I'm a kid. I don't understand that soap makes things slippery. Okay. So no. I get out of the bath. I climb up this ledge to get the duck, and I grab the duck. And as I grab the duck, I fell back. And fell back, everything fell on me. Right. Everything fell. I fell. I did a somersault into the bathtub. Boom.
Oh
Anyway, and then I just remember everything going warm, and I remember just like going, oh, this is weird. And then my mum heard, and she goes, what was that? And my mum runs in, and my mum looks at me and just starts screaming. And I'm standing up, and I'm looking around, going, what's wrong? What's wrong? And then my dad looks at me, and my dad runs in and goes, uh-oh. I'd cut my scrotum. And, yeah, and it was like, and I'm just a kid, and I'm like, ow! So everyone's screaming. We went to the emergency room. Just so everyone knows, everything's fine. Okay, everything works. Everything's great. Nothing hurt. Nothing bad happened. All right, everything was saved. And I just remember, like, the doctor looked saying to my dad, "He's gonna have a lot of fun stories to tell when he gets older." And dad's like, "Oh yeah." And then my mum was like, "But is it okay?" He's like, "Yeah, it's gonna be fine." I think she wanted to get me married off, and like my stock would have gone down if I had one ball. So she was like, "Oh, you got two balls still?" And I'm like, "Yeah, he does. He's fine. He's absolutely fine."
Oh, that's funny. All right, what's a I wish everyone could see our faces when we were saying that. We're all mouth agape, like, oh. Anyway, what is the best advice you have been given?
I think the best advice I've ever been given is just to be yourself.
Yeah.
That's probably the – I think it's like always be yourself.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure my family gave me lots of advice.
Don't climb trees.
I tend to ignore all of it. It's like, I'll do what I want. It's terrible. Yeah, no, I can't remember.
Well, that's okay. What is the best thing about you? That's a hard one to answer.
Actually, can I say that about Des?
Yeah, yeah, that's lovely.
Can we do that?
Yeah,
I think the best thing about Des is that it doesn't matter if you've, like, she's always happy to see, like, you're always happy to be around her, and she always has this warmth about her. You could have seen her an hour ago, and she'd be like, hey! You could have seen her a day ago, and she'd be like, hey! And you could see her a month ago, she'd be like, literally the same level of energy. You wouldn't believe what just happened at the coffee shop, you know? So she's so warm, and I just love that quality about her. She's so real. Like, yeah. She's just a real person, and I love that about her.
I love that about you.
See?
Yeah, that's just why we get along.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah. Like, after a month, though, I'd probably be like, oh, it's you again.
Hi. No. You'd be like, so I've got to go now.
No, I love your honesty. I really do. I think that's really
great.
Thank you. And yeah, and you are a really warm person as well, but you're straightforward and tell it how it is, which I like.
100%.
Yeah.
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 Well, that's great. All right, what is one of your pet peeves? It could be anything.
Pet peeve, you got one? 'Cause
No, I just really, really hate, flaky people. I should say something funny.
I was literally going to say that. I should have wrote this down because I was about to say the same. Fake people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just hate, but I hate it with like, I hate this quality about myself is when you know they're fake and yet they're still being fake, and I hate that I know that you're being fake at this fake moment. Yeah. And you're just like, why are we here? Like, yeah. This really annoys me right now that you're wasting my time.
Yeah.
Give me my coffee and...
I hate after we've been in lockdown for like 2 months, everyone's like, so what have you been up to?
Oh,
like,
my God.
You know, like, I have no news.
The same thing as you.
Literally nothing.
So this is Corona, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So like
globally.
Pointless conversation.
Yeah.
Okay. So I've got a few things. All right. What I will ask you is, what is something you've done to develop your careers? So in comedy or in art, what is something?
Do you know, I just paint a lot and then hope that one day someone will notice. but, like, I'm in my own little studio, like, on my own. I don't think. No, I went to Italy last year and did some residencies there, and I think that was probably the most fun thing I could have done.
Wow.
But for the rest of it, marketing and all that stuff, I'm terrible. I have no idea what I'm doing. You?
The best thing I've ever done, or sorry, what was the question?
To develop your career.
I developed my career. I think the best thing that I did was for, and I got this really good advice from a good friend and a comic in Perth, Sean Conway.
Yep.
And he told me when I first started, he goes, dude, you have to do comedy as much as possible for this first year. Just keep doing it. Because no matter how bad you think you're doing or whatever, just keep, or how good, even if you think you're doing good, keep doing it. Just always keep doing it. And I think at that stage, I did comedy like 4 to 5 times a week.
Wow.
And I just hanged out at every room.
Yeah.
And I just hanged out just in the crowd. And that for me just developed I got timing right. You know, yep. I could hear, oh, that's how they've done this. Watching comedians, even though it's hard for me to watch comics, I still went, it's like, oh, I can spend an hour. I can do this hour. I can go do it. And I did that for a year. And it just was so much better for me. I mean, I did the same set over and over again until I was comfortable with it.
Yep.
And that's probably the best thing I've done to develop my career.
I think, and you're an amazing mentor out there, because I know when I tried stand-up, you know, pulled me aside and you went through things with me. You made me feel so much more comfortable with it, so thank you.
Generous.
No, he was great. And I did it because I wanted to improve on our room. And,
yeah, absolutely. You know,
and it did. It made us look at our rooms and we just tweaked a few little things, but it was a great journey and I was really
– awesome.
Yeah, I really do appreciate that you actually did that. What advice would you guys give to your younger selves?
Oh, fuck.
I sort of wish that I hadn't spent so many years not painting, because, you know, if I'd spent those 15 years, you know, painting instead of, you know, being a rascal, then I probably would be a lot better than I am now. But also, like, living your life is really important, and I did a lot of really fun things.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and it kind of shaped who I am personality-wise. So, I've always had this thing where I just do what feels right for me, and I have this joke. I walk around and be like, "Do what I want."
Do what I want.
I'm like, "Yeah, Desiree, do what you want," because you know, I never do anything too stupid.
Yeah. I think to my younger self, I would first hug and then say it's going to be all right, and then I would also tell my younger self, it's like, Whatever you feel like doing, you should just do. Yeah. Just if you like, take the calculated risk, and if you in your heart you want to do it, like I think for my personally, like I've always things that I want to do, that I'm doing now, that I didn't do when I was a little bit younger, and for whatever reason, whether my dad said don't do it, whether my friends said, oh, you're not going to do good at that, you're not going to do this, and you sort of take, but when you're younger you take that on board.
Yeah.
And you just you spend years asking yourself, oh, am I going to do this, and you let people say shit to you, and then like a year later you go, oh, you know what, I want to find that guy and I want to tell him what for. I mean, I've got a list of people right now, if I see them right now, they're going to get it. Like, they're going to get it. It's not a kill list, but it's a list of, like, you know, hey, when you remember in 19 yeah, I hate you.
Yeah, you got to trust your instincts.
Yeah, very much so. I think that's that 3 minutes was like, just trust your instincts. Yeah.
I think I'd probably say be kinder to people as well.
Yeah. You never know what people are going through.
Yeah.
You never know. Like, just the odd, oi, dickhead, can be huge to someone. Like, oh, fuck. Like,
yeah.
You know, so I think always be kind in the first instance, you know, like, and then if they're a dickhead to you, be like,
yeah,
don't deserve my time, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's true. And even to yourself, but.
Like, oh, yeah.
That's really important. But I'm sure you guys are the same. We're so self-critical of ourselves. And then it comes back to, as well, being authentic to yourself again and knowing who you are. But I think that takes time, and we've got to go on our journey to understand and grow.
Absolutely, yeah.
Everyone's journey is different.
So is. I've got a card game, guys. I'm going to get you guys to pull a card. Read it out to each other, and the other person can answer. It's called Who'd You Rather?
So oh, okay.
Bit of a fun thing. If you don't like it, you can change it.
I don't really.
Yeah, I don't like mine at all.
I don't know what even that. Ah, this is a good one. Who'd you rather trade hair with?
Who would I rather trade hair with? Oh, dude, Bob Marley.
Oh, that's some great hair.
Yeah, that is some great hair. That would be like, oh, you'd be so cool.
Yeah.
P.S. I have my cousin's in England. My cousin, who's Pakistani, has a Jamaican husband, and their kids are little Pakistani Jamaican kids. Honestly, I'm telling you right now.
Yeah.
When they get older and they don't have dreadlocks, I'll be very upset. I'll be very. I'm like, you have the golden ticket. You can do it. My question is, who would you rather do body shots with? What are these questions?
Who would I rather do body shots with? Like, I think I would like to do body shots with Kate McKinnon because I think, one...
You look like her.
That'd be trippy. Do I look like her, though?
No, you don't. No.
But also, she's really funny, but she's also like, pretty sexy, so I think it would be fun.
Oh, that's very cool. All right, choose one more card each.
Okay, who'd you rather start a colony on Mars with?
You, Desiree.
I'm not going to Mars.
No, but that'd be how much fun would it be? We could be like Indiana Jones and everybody would be, I found this space rock. And I'm like, I found some honey. Yeah. Hey, NASA, guess what? What? Fuck you. We don't need you anymore. P.S. I think there was someone else here before us. We found all this stuff. Here we go. Who would you rather watch pole dance?
I just, sorry, just because you chose me for the Mars one, I'm like imagining you pole dancing.
Oh, man, I would destroy. I would dominate. Yes, there'd be just line. There, I would be, listen. There'd be women that have this fetish for like Disney, Winnie the Pooh. Like, they're out there somewhere. Like, they'd be like, hey, man, have you ever seen Winnie the Pooh pole dance? Well, guess what? Tonight, for $25 plus tipping dollars, you can see him.
Wasn't there a Shrek-themed burlesque show at Fringe?
Was there?
Oh, yeah, wow. There was. So, yeah, you're right. There is something for everyone.
Oh, is that the Shrek? What's it called? Shrekless? Oh, that account tried to follow me the other day.
Oh,
and I blocked them. No, this is a true story because I didn't know who it was. And I was like, I don't know who you are. Block. That's my new thing. If I don't know you, I don't follow you, but I block you. I don't want to know who you are. Get away from me, you loser. It's probably a nice guy or a woman. I don't know who it is.
Hey, you're missing out on a good opportunity there.
Nah, I'll wait till they like, you know what? I want a letter. I want to let you know, an old school letter, say, hey, you know, you blocked me, can you unblock me? Then I'll unblock them.
You know, social media is like has the intention of building followers.
It is, it is.
A lot of letters you're gonna have to be receiving if you ever want to grow your business on.
Hey, man, I've won awards. It's callbacks, baby.
Okay, what is your funniest joke that you know by heart?
Desiree.
I just can't remember jokes. I don't know. I've got a stupid brain. There's only one joke that I ever remember. It's very highbrow. No, it's okay. What did the fish say when it swam into a wall?
What?
Damn. That's the low level laughter that joke deserves.
It's like a good mum and dad joke there, right?
So good. It's got so many things in it.
Does it
dams,
though?
Fish, water.
No,
all
it's the worst joke ever. And I'm so, I hear a good joke and I'm like, oh, I have to remember that. Lock that away. Nothing.
So it's not the funny show, but I think it's like the joke that no matter how many times I hear it, I just keep pissing myself. Mm-hmm. It's from the late African-American comedian Patrice O'Neill, and the context is, and listen, just hear the joke, okay? So Patrice O'Neill would say the most horrible things and make people hate him straight away, but then get them, then he'd bring them back at the end.
Mm-hmm.
What his stand-up, he's passed away unfortunately, but one of his jokes, he had a show called Elephant in the Room, and one of the jokes he had in there, the premise was that a white woman's life is more valuable than anyone else's life in America. Okay, this is the black guy saying it, and I think it plays true. And what he did is he joked about it. He was like, "There's a serial killer," and I'm not qualified to retell his jokes, but I'm going to tell it anyway. There's a serial killer, you know, and he's a serial killer, Bob, you know, and he's killed this woman, and it was true. He killed this, It's Amanda Baker or something, right? And everyone's like, oh, Amanda Baker. Yeah, we all know Amanda Baker. Yeah, but he just killed this chick in Peru. This black chick. What was her name? Exactly. No one knows, you know. So the cold crowd was like, oh, we don't know. Yeah, we're pieces of shit because we don't know. We only know the white person's name. And that just started off his special, and it was like so good. So like, so for me, the joke is more just like that premise and that narrative that he starts off with, and it's like, oh my God. And that was done like 10 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And it still holds up now.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what I like. But the fish in the dam, yeah, that's great.
Okay, do you have any shows coming up where you might, or do you have any exhibitions or anything coming up this way?
No, oh, actually, yes, I do. I've got a piece in the Lethbridge 2000, which is in Queensland, so that Ooh. Opens in a couple of weeks.
Wow.
Yeah, so if you're in Queensland, go check it out.
Oh, baby, Queensland,
yeah.
Home of Pauline Hanson and Fush and Chops. I don't have any shows coming up because obviously Corona has cut out all the stand up at the moment. But
it's back, Uma.
It is. Yeah, I know it's back, but you know, like, you know, I'm blocking everyone. No, but yeah, I am. When I do, it'll be on my social media.
You're waiting for your formal invitation.
I'm waiting for my formal invitation. Can you please do a 5-minute set here? No.
Okay, speaking of socials, can you please share one of your social medias?
Yep, I'm on everything as Desiree Crossing, just one word.
Yep.
I'm on pretty much everything as Uma Comedy or Uma Azad Comedy, but on Instagram as Uma Comedy.
And Uma will block you.
Oh, listen, if you send me something, if you always start with a joke, give me a good joke, and then I'll add you.
Oh, okay. All right.
I haven't blocked you.
You know me.
Yeah, now I do.
Okay, fair point.
If I block you tonight, just have 24-hour block and then just talk mad crap about her.
Just to make a point.
Yeah.
All right. So we do have two shows coming up. There's Comedy at the Colour on Friday the 19th of June, which is our restart of NY Events Room.
My local.
It is.
Was I asked to be on this show?
I didn't ask anyone.
Oh, my God.
I put it out there. Who wants to be part of this?
Nah, see, blocked.
Oh, doesn't she know you
won awards?
Exactly.
No, we're definitely restarting. So, but we are at a reduced capacity with only 50, and tickets are selling very fast for that. And then on Friday the 3rd of July, we have Pride in July, and that's proudly supporting WA AIDS Council, DRN1, and the major sponsors for that, and Radio Media. Thank you guys so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
It's been really fun.
Oh, it's awesome. And thank you, listeners. And my name's Yvonne Fletcher, and this is Bounce Back. Next week, we're joined by another special guest who is also contributing to Pride in July.